This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I do two podcasts, this one on the Middle East and another on mainstream American politics. Thank you for listening to this podcast where we talk about issues in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, and American policies. You can get more information on all of my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com. Good morning. It's Friday, April 12, 2020, and I'm Ray Hanania, special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News newspaper, and you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast broadcast from Detroit, Michigan, through 690 AM WNZK Radio. I hope everyone is healthy and surviving the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic, and then on top of that, the protests that in many cases turned into riots and arson and looting. And I guess it depends where you live, because there were some areas where the protests were pretty effective and they made a good point and, you know, they were good. And then there were some places where the protests were just a front for a lot of looting and destruction. Some of the cities are terrible. We're going to actually talk about the impact of these looters and arsonists and criminals that took to the streets under the guise of the protests or the shadow of the protests. Because like I said, there were many protesters who were doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing. But nobody was addressing the looters and the, you know, the agitators who were just destroying buildings. I mean, it's just, I remember last weekend, you know, just sitting there at that, right after Memorial Day, that week, and then the weekend after, it really hit on a Saturday and Sunday when America was sitting at home watching TV, 24-hour looting channel on CNN, and all of the cable news, and all they're doing is they're showing all the looting and everything. It was just horrible. It was just terrible. Anyway, the Arab Street Radio Podcast is part of the U.S. Arab Radio Network, hosted by Layla El Husseini, in an effort to energize and empower Arab Americans to stand up for their rights. For more information, you can go to my website at hanania.com. And afterwards, you can go to the podcast. You can get the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or by visiting my podcast website, thearabstreet.org. So I am broadcasting on Facebook this time. But you're going to be, unfortunately, the technology is a little rough, so you'll be able to hear me, and believe me, I'll fill an hour up, no problem, I'll just be yapping. People who call in at 248-557-3300, you'll only be able to hear me if you use one of those, you'll only be able to hear yourself on Facebook, I guess, if you're using one of those links that I posted underneath this video spot, if you could do that. I'm not even sure, let's see. Put those on again. Okay, I just posted those links if you want to listen. It's too complicated. It should be simple if you want to get the people in there to do that. Our discussion this morning, again, we're broadcast 8 a.m. in Detroit, 7 a.m. here in Chicago, 3 p.m. in Jerusalem, 4 p.m. in Dubai. All my buddies in Dubai and Saudi Arabia and the Arab News newspaper. I'm the special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News. I do a lot. I do media consulting. I do syndicated column writing. I write for the Southwest News newspaper group. It's about 8 or 9 newspapers here in Chicagoland. The Des Plaines Valley News, the regional newspaper, great paper, the Reporter, and of course, the Southwest News Herald. Newspaper, and then they got a few other papers where they run my column every week, and usually I think it comes out Tuesday night, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's usually out on the street, and the dogs are howling when they hear me, right? So what are you going to do? I'm happy to do that, and plus, of course, I write a column every week for the Arab News newspaper at arabnews.com, and I also write a lot of stories about the Arab Americans. I try to focus on Arab American issues and coverage of Middle East issues here from the United States. So this week I did a number of stories. One was that focused on Arab American store owners who were the collateral damage in the George Floyd riots that swept across America beginning May 25th. I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of stores that were damaged, and nobody was covering these people. Nobody was writing about these store owners. You know, these Arab store owners, they were targeted in many cases because nobody cares about Arab Americans in this country. You know, if I say Arab lives matter, someone's going to get mad at me. And I'm going to be a racist, right? Because I care about my people. So I'll come up with something else so that it doesn't disrespect Black Lives Matter, okay? Because Black Lives do matter, but so do a lot of other lives. And, yeah, it's this country's been beset with all kinds of racism, we've had problems forever. But so much has been done to help the African-American community. I don't think that Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is doing a good job in helping make it a better situation. I think she's kind of exploiting it. And, you know, it's maybe it touches too close to home for her, so she can't deal with it. She can't be a leader. She can be a victim, and she can get out there and, you know, blame everybody for all the problems and cause tension. But all her statements about, that attacking the police, you know, it's stereotyping that is a problem. It's hypocritical. You're African American, and people stereotype you and say, oh, all African Americans are criminals. That's racism, all right? And there are different levels of racism. Racism out of stupidity because they don't understand stuff, or racism out of hate. You know, that's common sense. We know that. There are people out there that are racist just because they don't get it. And then there are people that are racist because they hate. They hate black people. Yeah, those people are a problem. And there are some people in the police force and in society, just like there are people in the African-American community who hate white people. And that's a form of racism, too, a different kind. They're anger and they hate. So nobody addresses that part. They address the one that the media focuses on, which is the racism and hate against African-Americans. But I'll tell you what, when you stereotype and you say one police officer or four police officers, one who physically restrains and ends up killing a suspect, who was being arrested for cause, and he gets excessive and results in his death, that is a bad cop who doesn't know how to do his job, and he shouldn't be in uniform. But it becomes racism, in a sense, parallel racism, when you then take that one bad cop and you project it on all police officers, and say the police industry is bad. Just because there might be 10 other incidents. Yeah, that's bad. 10 other incidents are bad. And we need something to do, you know, we need to do something about that. But you can't stereotype all police. And I think that that's what, you know, people are upset about, because a lot of people rely on the police to protect them from the bad people. And the bad people aren't just black or Hispanic or white or Asian or Arab. They're bad people in every society, and they're criminals. And yes, some race and ethnic groups are targeted more than other in this crackdown on crime. But to single it out and say that, oh, you know, we're the only people that are suffering, that's wrong. And then to turn and say that, you know, all police are bad, we're going to defund police. Are you kidding me? No. And then the worst part about all this, in my opinion, all right, this is the worst part. I mean, obviously death is bad, but the other part that's worse. I mean, you can't just say, well, death is, you know, that's the crime. Nothing else matters. No other crime matters. That's what somebody said. They said you can't compare the physical destruction of a building to the death of a person. Well, yeah, it's not exactly the same, but I'm going to tell you what, you've destroyed a life of a family and a neighborhood when you destroy a store. So that's bad. And yeah, it's not like they were killed, which is higher, But I'm going to tell you something, to ignore that and not focus on it or just treat it like it's a news story, which is what the news media was doing. You know, it was just disturbing to see how the media focused on the looting and the rioting and the arson and the vandalism, just showing people walking in and out of stores stealing stuff. But nobody else seemed to focus on it. Nobody was out there yelling and screaming. I didn't see anybody hold a press conference saying, you know, stop the looting. You know, stop it. Nobody was out there. Nobody was out there, you know, pointing and saying that person is bad. They piggybacked on the protest and they're exploiting it. I didn't see the protest leaders doing enough to speak out against that. In fact, I heard the attorney for George Floyd's family basically say that the looting and the arson was a direct result of the police killing George Floyd, and that people were almost saying that they're justified by going out there and destroying things because they were angry. Now, I don't agree with that. And you know what? Some people are going to, you want to quibble with me about some of this stuff. Go ahead, quibble with me. I get it. I understand. You know, we do have one of the families on there, one of the members of the family, and if they wanted to call in, Echlas, if you or Hannah or Peter want to call in at 248-557-3300, 248-557-3300, you know, just to, if you want to talk, and I know it's not easy to go public and share the pain and suffering that you went through. This is one of the families of several stores in the Chicago area that were just completely savaged and destroyed. And there was another family, Arab family, Mataria, Naim Mataria. His store was looted and savaged. And then when he left, he came back thinking, you know, things were going to be, you know, better. He got back to his store and it was destroyed by fire. They burned it down. And Shaden Malley, thank you for pointing that out. George Floyd's brother did urge people not to loot. He did. But there was that excuse, though, that was given by his attorney with them there, saying at the press conference that they understand the looting, that this is a response of the police actions. You know, they didn't take, and I'm not saying that the Floyds should take responsibility for anything. They were victims in this. But the people who rallied around George Floyd, they wouldn't take responsibility for the looting. And I think that's something that was disturbing to many people who are not criminals. Not every white person who's watching, you know, these riots and afraid of what's happening, you know, is racist. They're not racist. And they wanted to see somebody be responsible, especially from the protesters, to say this is terrible. But in fact, a lot of the protests got out of hand because of the looting, because of the violence. I mean, the protests started pretty good, and then they started attacking police cars. Then they started attacking regular cars that were going by. They busted the windows. They turned them over. They lit them on fire. They did a lot of terrible things, and I didn't see anybody standing up telling them to stop. I did hear, and again, yeah, George Floyd's brother did say people should not loot. In fact, it took 2 weeks when I started to hear that message, but it never happened before. We're going to talk about some of the families that that I wrote about in the Arab News who lost their businesses and destroyed their lives. And, you know, if the Salami family and the Mataria family, if one of their members want to call in at 248-557-3300 to share this pain and the destruction and the horror that they went through. And for somebody to say that, well, it still doesn't rise to murder, you know, that they weren't killed. And I'm going to say, okay, thankfully, thank God they weren't killed. Thank God they weren't killed. But because they weren't killed, it wasn't a big major suffering, they deserve our support. And I haven't seen anybody, you know, I called all of the Arab Chambers of Commerce. I emailed them all. I contacted all of them, all across the United States, asking, what are you doing for the stores that are being destroyed. This is your community, you know, Arab Americans. We should, and Muslims, we should take care of our own and then use that as a platform to stand up and speak out against racism and violence against people because of race. And I'm repeating again that George Floyd's killing was a crime. And the police officer deserves to be punished. And even the three police officers who were there, you know, I don't know, did they not see that this guy was suffering? He was choking. They're responsible too. But I'm also saying that all the people, a lot of the people around the protest, a lot of the organizers, they didn't do enough to stop the looting. And I think in a way they thought, and I believe this, I can't prove it, but I think that some of them looked and said the looting is what's going to get them the attention that they want. Without the looting, it wasn't as big of a story. It was just a protest. And the media, I'm telling you, the news media is worse. Yeah, I was in that profession for a long time. We feed on destruction. The news media feeds on destruction. And we thrive. The news media thrives on it. If it bleeds, it leads. And if you're happy, it gets buried in the paper. There has to be a cute little saying, the opposite of it bleeds, it leads, about if it's happy, it's sappy. You know, but they don't have one because they don't care about the happy stories. They care about the tragedy. And the news media profited from this because their advertising went up. And their profits went up. Their viewership went up. So for the media, for the wrong reasons, a dying news media finds relief and redemption in the destruction of society. It's just terrible. I'm Ray Hanania. You are listening to the Arab Street Radio here at WNZK AM 690 Radio. We will podcast this later. We're broadcasting live from Detroit. I'm on Facebook. You're able to hear me on Facebook, but unfortunately, you won't be able to hear the callers on Facebook. You will have to use one of those links that I posted, arabradio.us/live or radio.net/s/USA Arab Radio. Those links are right at the top under the Facebook broadcast. You'll be able to listen and hear any callers at 248-557-3300. We're going to take a quick break here at the Arab Street Radio. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion. We'll see if we can take some calls. Again, I'm Ray Hanania. 248-557-3300 is our phone number, 248-557-3300 here on U.S. Arab Radio Network. We're going to be right back right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. We're broadcasting from Detroit Radio in Michigan through 690 AM WNZK Radio. And they got a big network. They're all over the place in the greater Detroit area, Michigan, Windsor, Canada, Ohio. I think they even have a station now that's broadcasting in Washington, D.C. And, of course, I'm in Chicago. We don't actually have a radio station in Chicago, but you can listen to us live by going to the links that I sent out. So you can listen at arabradio.us/live, I think is the big one. Or you can call us at 248-557-3300. 248-557-3300. We're broadcasting on Facebook. It's an experiment. Excuse me. It's probably not working perfectly. You can hear me, but you won't be able to hear the callers, unfortunately. So I'm doing less calling. But I want to tell you the story about these Arab stores that were destroyed. They burned the protesters and rioters and looters and arsonists. They burned vehicles. They smashed windows. They defaced buildings. We watched it on TV. It was like continuous. Now, yeah, that's not the loss of life, but don't tell me that that isn't as important. Yeah, you could take someone's life, and that's horrible, but you can also take someone's life by destroying their lives and by destroying everything that they built over 30, 40 years. And I interviewed Echla Salami, who is the mother whose husband, Peter, set up the business back in the 1980s in Chicago. And one day in the middle of these protests, they turned violent and nobody did anything. Looters walking in and out. They showed pictures of the looters coming in and out of their store, stealing stuff. And I'm thinking, some of these looters are crazy because they're walking out from other stores. You see them walking around with toilet paper, you know, and I'm thinking, if I was crazy enough to be a looter, I wouldn't be stealing the toilet paper. But that's what they were taking. It was like a comedy, because a tragic comedy, because they were just taking whatever they could get. It wasn't like that. Oh, they were looting because we need food. We're looting because, you know, I'm going to starve to death and I have to steal. And I think, okay, I can get that, but I'll bet you any amount of money, because I know this family, Salome and the Mataria family, that anytime the community needed something around their store, at the community where their stores were at, they provided food to the neighbors. They provided support and money. They provided jobs. They helped. They were providing an essential service. And, you know, 90% of the people who were involved with in the community there, 90% of them were not involved with the looting or the arson or the destruction. 90% of the people in the community were doing the right thing, you know, and they're helping these store owners who've been destroyed. And they're just one aspect of the people who've been victimized. But there were these looters, it was so destructive. And the family, the Salome family, for example, the husband set up the business, you know, back in the 1980s. And when he passed away, Peter Salome, he turned the business over to his wife, Ichlis, and to his sons, Steve and John. And they worked hard every morning. I can tell you, I know exactly. I met these people probably a long time ago. But I can tell you, they got up every morning, early in the morning. They went to the store. They ran the business. They treated African Americans and Hispanics and white people, all the people in their neighborhood, with complete respect. They did that. They never had any problems with the community where they worked. They got along with them very well. And yet, when the time came to take advantage and destroy their business, nobody stood up. Nobody stopped them. The worst part is, nobody told their story. Nobody in the media. They were just backdrop for CNN profiting off of this by showing, oh, wow, look at the looters breaking into a store. They're breaking into a life, a family's life. This store was at 4156 West Division Street in Chicago, Pete and Jack's Liquor and Grocery. They destroyed all their hard work, and it was terrible. Then the second store, there was another one. I had the struggle to find and connect with these people, because I'm telling you, nobody cared. They were oblivious. Society was oblivious to the victims of the looting, and they still don't care. People say, oh, looting's not the same as killing. Yeah, you're right. Looting is not the same as killing. Absolutely. You are absolutely right. That is completely correct. But looting and the destruction and the arson, destruction of a store, that is bad. And it's the next worst thing to taking a life, because you're destroying a family. And they're still alive to suffer, because now they have no income. Now they have no way to, you know, reestablish themselves, get back on their feet. So this idea that, oh, hey, they can always put it back together. Oh, yeah, that's easy for you to say. And all those people that were saying that, they'll be able to get their stuff back together. A lot of these stores that were destroyed, you know, Arab Americans went into the African American community in the 50s. And in Chicago, I know that story. It started with Crammel Milk. Crammel Milk couldn't find anybody to sell food in the African American and inner cities, I should say, not just African American, but in the poorer urban areas of Chicago. In the poor communities, no business wanted to open a store there. So Crammel Milk had one Arab American working for them, and he said to, and Crammel Milk's owners said, listen, if you can go out and recruit people to open stores in these areas where there are no stores, we will help you. And all you have to do, obviously, the condition was that they only sell Crammel Milk. Now, I don't know if you remember Crammel Milk. It was a big deal in the 50s and 60s. So these Arab Americans, this one Arab American guy, Crammel Milk, was telling people, open the store, they'll loan you the money. They need to sell food products in these communities. The big stores like A&P and Dominick's, and I don't know if Jewel was around back then. But they wouldn't open stores because they didn't want to be there. They saw it as being criminally frightening. They stereotyped whole communities. So these big stores, they'd put bars on their windows. So these Arabs would go into these stores and they would open their, in these communities, and they'd open their stores and they would provide a needed service that no one else wanted to do. And they got along. And what's interesting about Arabs is, you know, that they couldn't open the stores in the white community because they're, I'm not saying every white person is a racist, but there are a lot of white people that think I'm black. You know, that I'm dark skinned, right? So I'm just another version of a black person. So a lot of Arab stores had trouble. They would try to open up stores in white suburban areas, and the councils in those suburban areas would vote to deny them business licenses, just like they vote to deny them the opening of mosques today in many suburbs. They were doing it to stores, Arab stores. So the only place a lot of these Arab businesses could open would be in the hardest, most economically tough areas of poor communities. And a lot of times those poor communities were minority, African American, Asian, Hispanic, even white, poor white areas. They would go in there and they'd open these stores. And some, yes, were some of the store owners jerks? Yeah, there were some. But there were a lot of them who were close to the community, who donated, supported to the community, hired people. There's, I'm going to say that in any situation, 10% of the people are jerks and they're terrible, but 90% of them are good. And these two families that I interviewed, the Salami family and the Mataria family, they're good people. They were good people who were punished for something they had nothing to do with. Their lives were destroyed. And I do, Hassan Nijem with the Arab American Chamber of Commerce in Chicago. Hassan Nijem was the only chamber in the whole country, Arab chamber, who was concerned about these Arab businesses and who's doing something to help these Arab businesses. He's actually doing something to help them. That's what he's doing. But all the other Arab chambers, I called them all. You know, they always call them to say, hey, can you buy a big ad for $5,000 for our dinner? Yeah, okay, so we buy ads and we support them any way we can. But when I called them and say, hey, what's happening in your community? You're the Arab Chamber of Commerce. You represent Arab businesses. What's happening to the businesses? None of them knew what was going on. None of them had any idea, as if they weren't even looking at the chambers. Los Angeles, San Francisco, Houston. I called all over, Orlando, Florida, all these areas, New York, New Jersey, these big areas where there are big Arab American populations. Detroit. Now, Detroit, the one area probably where Arab American businesses had no problems, and maybe we should look at that sometime, there weren't as many problems. Osama Siblani, who I emailed back and forth with, who is the publisher of the Arab American News in Detroit, said that there were no problems with Arab American businesses being destroyed, and I think that's phenomenal. All right, we got to take another break here. I'm a little late here. I'm Ray Hanania, special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News newspaper. Their website is arabnews.com, and this is the Arab Street Radio and podcast broadcast from Detroit, Michigan, through 690 AM WNZK, through the U.S. Arab Radio Network, hosted by Layla Al-Husseini. I'm Ray Hanania, our number 248-557-3300. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion, and then I'll open the lines and take some phone calls at 248-557-3300. We'll be right back right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and podcast. We're trying to broadcast on Facebook, and I tell you, Facebook sucks. It's terrible. Now it's like, okay, they said the waiting for live video. Okay, it's crap. I'm going to just end this live video, and maybe we can start it again in a minute. We just want to save or delete. Oh, God, this technology. Technology was not the what they promised us. It's just terrible. It's absolutely not what they promised at all. It's completely horrible. So it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And in fact, it's actually contributed to the terror that we've gone through as Americans. I'm going to start a new live broadcast on Facebook because they're just crappy systems here. And we're going to go live radio, Arab Radio Part 2. Arab Radio Part 2. Okay. Say something. Yeah. We'll just go live. 2-1. All right. We're back live on Facebook. Live on WNZK AM 690 Radio. Our number is 248-557-3300. Now, we got a new live broadcast on Facebook. This is terrible. I don't know. All right. Hey, Mike, let's go to the phones if we have Jerry still on there. I know we've been talking a long time, and he was on earlier. If he's still there, put him on. If not, we'll take calls at 248-557. Yeah. Hey, he's Jerry. On. Oh, good. Thanks, Mike. Hey, Jerry, how are you? Unfortunately, nobody on Facebook is going to be able to hear you. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. Good morning to you, and good morning to all the viewers. And thanks for taking my call, and thanks to your producer, Mr. Mike Shepka. And I want to salute Ms. Layla Al-Husseini, the founder of the Arab Voice of America from Detroit. Ray, I listen to you from A to Z, and make sense what you said. Ray, my friend, as a Middle Eastern, Arab Chaldean in the metro Great Detroit area, I'm very proud that we condemn the crime against Mr. George Floyd, and even in Dearborn and Detroit, there was people, Middle Eastern, Chaldean, and religious leaders from mosque, from church, they were walking along with Governor of Michigan, Ms. Kirsten Whitmer. And I'm very proud because we don't believe in violence. We don't believe in racist or discrimination. But, Ray, there was one thing I disagree when a couple of years ago I called the radio talk show of Reverend L. Sharpton. You know L. Sharpton.
Yes.
He's one of the African-American activists. And I respect him, so I wait for him because his show there is very popular, and I wait 1 hour and 37 minutes till they took my call.
I only got an hour. I only have an hour. I wish I had 2 hours. But
yes, I wish if you got 24/7.
That would be
awesome. Right. So, Mr. L. Sharpton, say, Mr. Habba, what make you wait that long? I say, Reverend, I have a message. He say, what's your message, Jerry? I say, my message is every life matters, even the four-legged creature, their life matters.
Right.
sorry.
Every life does matter, Jerry. You're right.
Black life matters. Because when you say Black Life Matters, right, it's kind of racist. I don't like that title.
Well, I understand. Listen, I understand when they say Black Lives Matter. I get it because, you know, African-Americans probably are the biggest targets of racism in this country. Not the only targets, but the biggest targets. And they do have issues and things that, you know, and they take offense when you say all lives matter. You have to say all lives matter in the context of and understanding that Black Lives Matter, too. I agree with you. Everybody's life matters. And I don't like this singling out of just one, you know, Black Lives Matter. Yeah. I wish they would have made it a broader, you know, like Black Lives and Other Lives Matter. It would have been great, but that's not what they did, unfortunately.
Mr. Ray, you know, I want to clear the message. I send it to Reverend Al Sharpton. I say, Reverend, the Arab people, the Middle Eastern, like you said earlier, we open our business, the grocery stores, in the most poor and danger area in Detroit, when the average chain grocery store, like used to be Farmer Jack, Chatham, Wrigley, AMP, there was nobody open store in those.
Yeah, I did. I talked. That's what I said. That's what I said.
So Reverend El Sharpton, my people, the Middle Eastern, they lost hundreds and hundreds between father and son and daughter in the grocery store. Do you tell me, Reverend El Sharpton, the life of Middle Eastern, it doesn't matter?
I don't think that's what he was going to say. I don't think that's what he said. I don't think that that's what they're saying by Black Lives Matter, that the lives of the Arab Americans don't matter. But I have to tell you, the media is basically saying that. Jerry, I got to let you go because we got another break. We got to take.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Just one thing I want to tell you. Quick. As we sympathize with our African-American,
yes.
I wish if they sympathize with the Middle Eastern when our people get killed, but I don't see nobody support us.
Nobody
or defended
us. Nobody does. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of these police are trained. Thank you, Jerry, for calling. Thank you.
The people protest.
All right, Jerry, I got to cut you off. You know, this is radio. We only got an hour. I love Jerry. He's a good guy. But, you know, what's really strange is that the Israelis were providing a lot of the training, and one of their training techniques was to put the knee on the neck and hold people down on the ground. Now, as soon as you bring that up, the media shuts up. They don't want to talk about it because they'll take a beating, you know, from the Israeli lobby. And that's not to say all Israelis are bad. They're not bad. There are some. Governments suck. The Israeli government is terrible. They're horrible and hypocrites. But that doesn't mean that Israelis are horrible and hypocrites. Just the governments. That's where what I focus on. It's just terrible. And I have to say that, you know, the media, they pick and choose what they want. And they kind of fueled the violence by putting the focus on the looting and the arson without holding anybody accountable. No, who was held accountable? And then when you arrest the looters and the arsonists, then your governments are attacked, you know, for doing something. And then you become accused of racism. By the way, you know, if somebody does something bad, you arrest them, and then they start videotaping the arrest. Then they start videotaping the moment when the person gets arrested, you know, and the police take him into custody. And then they start saying, oh, look, you know, I was abused and I was treated. So there's a lot of people who are not as innocent as they claim. And it's just a mess. It's horrible. This whole thing was terrible. But I'm telling you, you need to look at the victims of the looting. There's not enough attention is spent on these families. Not just Arab Americans, but Arab Americans got the brunt of the looting and the arson across the country. In Minneapolis, there was a family, Wadi, W-A-D-I, and his daughter 4 years ago or 3 years ago, she, I think, was about 14. She's a little older now, obviously, 17, works at the store in Minneapolis. And her father was being threatened by street gang members from around her store, you know, her father's store. So she went on social media. Again, she's like a 13-year-old. You know, she goes on social media and she says stupid stuff, you know, attacking the people that are attacking her father, and uses the N-word in her social media post from, you know, 3 years ago out of anger, which is stupid. It's unjustified. I'm not saying it's justified. But she was reacting out of anger to what was happening, the threats to her father. She felt nobody was doing anything about it. Now 3 years pass, George Floyd walks into an Arab-owned grocery store, Cup Foods, in Minneapolis, and he tries to pass a $20 bill. They don't accept it. He leaves. He comes back. He tries to pass another fake counterfeit $20 bill that was counterfeit. They call the police. The police come outside. The store owner doesn't know anything about what's happening outside now. And the police come, and then they do what they do, and they end up killing George Floyd. He didn't deserve to die for passing a $20 counterfeit bill, allegedly a counterfeit bill. But he did resist. He didn't want to get in the car. I guess he was having some issues, and it got very confused. Either the police weren't paying attention, or they just took it for granted that this is just a routine thing, and they're just going to arrest him if he doesn't do what they want. They're going to, you know, use force to force him to do what they want, and then he dies. They threatened that Arab family in that store. They had to go into hiding because of what happened. The threats to their lives were unbelievable. And then north of that store is where this one girl, who her father was operating the Holy Land Grocery in this huge market complex. It's a giant building, a block wide, block long, where they had like about 50, I think, or 45 ethnic stores. And his was one of the largest in this complex. It's like an enclosed building, like the merchandise mart here in Chicago. And his store was in it. And someone looked back at his daughter's social media post and found the N-word. She used it one time, said some terrible things about the people that were threatening her father, brought it out. And there wasn't even a discussion. The company that owned the market building that was leasing the space to the store terminated the lease instantly, and they became the targets of threats, death threats. So I get this, that yeah, someone died, but now suddenly you respond with death threats. The death is only bad when you're the victim, but you can then make death threats and looting and arson and destruction. It was terrible. Listen, we got to take another break here at the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast on 690 AM WNZK Radio. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion. The number is 248-557-3300. We're back live on Facebook. But still, you know, you can't hear the caller. So, I don't know. The technology sucks. Okay, that's the bottom line lesson out of all this. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages. And welcome back to the last 8 minutes of the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Detroit, Michigan, through 690 AM WNZK Radio. You know, I've done radio all my life and media all my life since the 1970s. I used to be on WLS Radio for years. I think it was 10 years when I was at the Chicago Sun-Times. I did the radio show there while I was covering Chicago City Hall. And I really loved it because radio was a great way to connect with people. In a very personal way, you know, people like to hear your voice. They would read my columns and my news stories, and I had a lot of readers, but radio always augmented that. But the one thing that I always believed was that the Arab American community didn't have a voice. And I know the Sun-Times got really upset with me when I insisted that they send me with a group of reporters they sent to cover the Intifada in late 1989, 1990, and I insisted on going, saying, hey, I'm the only Palestinian-American journalist in the country working at a major newspaper beat, and I think the reaction I got from the editors was, you're Palestinian? We thought you were Puerto Rican. You know, they never would have hired me if they knew I was Palestinian. They hate Arabs in the media. And I was upset that the media wasn't covering the Arab American community. And it's always been my crusade to help get attention for Arab Americans. That doesn't mean we don't have some Arab Americans that are terrible. Because like I said earlier, 10%, the 10% factor, 10% of all people are bad. Doesn't matter whether you're black, doesn't matter whether you're Hispanic, doesn't matter whether you're white, doesn't matter whether you're Asian, doesn't matter whether you're Arab. There are bad people in every community. There are people that do bad things, but it has nothing to do with, you can't stereotype. You can't do that. So I felt that I needed to do something. I was able to build up a very successful media consulting company where I do a lot of media for a lot of clients. And at the same time, pretty much out of my pocket, I do a lot of stuff in the Arab American community to help them understand communications. I've spent, I'm doing very good. If I never had anything to do with the Arab American community, I'd be doing really well. People wouldn't hate me as much. But because I'm Arab American, the media hates me. They can't stand me. But I don't really care because I learned from one of my editors, one thing I did learn was that these people that hate you reflect the base of popularity that's out there, because the one person that hates you is offset by the 100 that love you and follow you. But the people that love you don't want to get involved in the conflict, so they're quiet. It's the haters that are crazy, and they will just come out and hate you. So it's no big deal. I mean, I really don't care. Anybody wants to say whatever they want to say about me, I don't mind. I can take it. I'm thick-skinned. I can put up with the criticism. I fight with politicians all the time. That's just the way of the world. Journalism and politicians don't always get along. And I only work with the politicians that I like, the government officials that I think are doing great things. And I've been, you know, offered jobs with a lot of government officials that I've turned down because I didn't think that they were doing what they needed to do. I've been hired by some that haven't been very good, and a couple that went to jail. What are you going to do? That happens too. But I got a good crop of people that I'm working for, and I really respect them. I think they're phenomenal, and they do some great stuff. But then on the other side, the Arab community, we're still ostracized. We're still shut out by the news media. We're shut out by society. There must have been 12 stores in Chicago totally destroyed, and nobody wrote about them. You didn't see the Chicago media go out and say, hey, Arab Americans are collateral damage in these protests and riots and looting and arson. Nobody cared. Nobody cared about that, and that's terrible. I felt that something needed to be said, so I used my writing abilities to share those stories about Arab Americans. I want people to see what's happening in the Arab American community. And the Arab news in Saudi Arabia, they have bureaus in Japan. They actually read my columns in Japanese in Japan. They translate it. I love when they tweet my column out. And the fact that they've tweeted the column, I'll get a notification on Twitter, and then when I go to look at it, it's in Japanese. I have no idea what they're writing. Hopefully they're writing nice things about me. I don't know. We also have a bureau in London that is very active, and they do a lot of good stuff. We have a bureau in Pakistan for the Arab news, and we're opening up a bureau here in the United States, and I've been heading up that launch based out of Chicago. And we have Ephraim Kasafi in, he was in Washington, D.C., moved to New York. Ephraim is managing the bureau in New York. He'll be covering the United Nations. The last time I went to the United Nations last September, I got Legionnaire's disease. I was there, I was there 9 days covering the UN. It was a great experience. But the one thing I did learn is the Arabs, even in the UN, they have the worst PR, the worst communications. Everybody else would come out and talk to me except for the Arabs. They wouldn't come out and talk to an Arab journalist. But all the other governments from all around the world were dying to talk to the media except for the Arabs and the Palestinians. They would not. They were so afraid of the media. They don't understand communications. And, of course, I only got 2 minutes left, so I can't go through the whole heck out of it. But, listen, you can go to my website, if you want, at hanania.com. That's my hub, the dailyhookah.com, it's also called. And at the hanania.com, you will see, at the dailyhookah.com, you will see all my featured columns, the most recent stuff. I showcase some stuff over there, the podcast for the Arab Street podcast, and also my mainstream podcast, Ray Hanania, on politics. I do that too. So, but I want to thank everybody for joining me today. I appreciate everybody being out here, doing what you're doing. We're at the end of the show. I want to thank Mike again. And again, I apologize for some of the technical problems with Facebook, trying to get the audio on Facebook from the radio show's rough. I'll keep experimenting to see if I can do it again. Anyway, you guys have a great month. We will talk to you later. I'm Ray Hanania. Remember, go to hanania.com. Appreciate it, and goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye. This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I do two podcasts, this one on the Middle East and another on mainstream American politics. Thank you for listening to this podcast where we talk about issues in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, and American policies. You can get more information on all of my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com.